Good morning. It's Wednesday, August 14th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, why thousands of people plan to protest the DNC next week. Maui is in trouble 1 year after the wildfires. And a surprising finding about religion in America. But first, to Russia's Kursk region, where the Ukrainian surprise attack is turning the tables on Russia. Thousands of Ukrainian troops and armored vehicles stormed across the border last week. It's the biggest foreign incursion into Russia since World War II. And Moscow struggled to respond.
The Russians don't seem to have that much of a plan.
That's military analyst Michael Clark speaking with Sky News.
They're using their internal security troops, the Rosgvardia, who are not very good because they're only internal security troops and some of their conscripts. And the Russians don't have a reserve force because they didn't regard this area as a battle area.
Russia was forced to evacuate tens of thousands of people. The New York Times reports on how Ukraine kept plans under wraps, disguising movements as training exercises. Some senior officers learned about it just days before the operation. Clark told Sky News the planning and execution was impressive.
The Ukrainians are now rotating their people, which is very interesting, elite troops. So they go in for 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours, and then they come out again, take a little rest, then they go back in again. And that shows, I mean, all attacking troops, they can only work for about 48, 72 hours before they're exhausted because they're not getting much sleep. They're under constant tension. They're fighting. And so rotating troops shows that they're really quite well organized.
Former NATO Deputy Secretary General Rose Gottmuller spoke with CNN earlier about how Ukraine was trying to catch Russia off guard.
This is clearly trying to insert some uncertainty on the Russian side and force them to draw troops to the Kursk region.
And it looks like the strategy worked. Moscow says it's diverted forces to defend Russian territory and repel the attack. Russian officials have repeatedly claimed to have the situation under control, only to lose more ground. Another Russian region near Kursk declared an emergency. Ukraine's international allies are supporting its latest moves. President Biden says the attack is creating real problems for Putin, though the White House has been careful to say it didn't help Ukraine plan the ground attack inside Russia. Now the question is how Putin will respond. He has the resources to hit back very hard. It's just a matter of moving them into place. But in doing that, he may weaken Russia's ability to wage war on Ukraine elsewhere. The Ukrainian strike inside Russia is forcing Putin into these kinds of tough choices, and that may define the course of the war over the coming weeks. Pro-Palestinian protesters say they'll be showing up in large numbers next week at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Democratic leaders had hoped that with Kamala Harris now at the top of the ticket, some of the backlash Biden faced for support of Israel's war would fade. But the Washington Post spoke to people who say it hasn't. At a rally last week in Michigan, protesters interrupted Harris's speech, and she quickly shut them down.
You know what? If you want Donald Trump to win, then say that, otherwise I'm speaking.
A few days later, in Arizona, she took a different approach when interrupted.
And the president and I are working around the clock every day to get that ceasefire deal done and bring the hostages home. So I respect your voices, but we are here to now talk about this race in 2024.
As the Post notes, Harris, as the vice president, is not the architect of Biden's policies on the war, and she's been more outspoken about the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. According to officials there, close to 40,000 Palestinians have been killed. Harris has called on Israel to do more to protect civilians. She also met last week with organizers in Michigan who are behind the quote-unquote uncommitted movement. They successfully encouraged more than 100,000 Democrats in that state to vote uncommitted in the primary instead of for Biden as a form of protest against support for Israel's war. Post White House reporter Yasmin Abu Talib told us that Democratic voters sympathetic to the Palestinian cause want to see more action.
They know she has expressed more empathy with Palestinians than they believe President Biden has, but they want to see if that translates into a policy difference. Would she condition military support to Israel? Would she ever be willing to cut off offensive weapons? Would she be willing to call for an arms embargo?
It's an issue Harris can't avoid. Just yesterday, the Biden administration gave the green light to $20 billion in potential weapons sales to Israel. Abu Talib spoke with voters in Illinois from Bridgeview, also called Little Palestine. It's one of the largest Palestinian-American communities in the country. Many residents have lost family members in the war or know people who have been displaced. They say they feel betrayed by Democrats. Amira Daoud, a teacher in the community, summed up her reservations this way.
Our community is divided, not in the sense of Republican versus Democrat, but do we even vote? What's the point of voting?
Organizers of the pro-Palestinian protest movement say they'll make their voices and concerns heard at the DNC next week, sending a clear message that Harris and the Democratic Party still have more work to do to win their votes. As one protester told Abu Talib, they want this year's convention to be reminiscent of the one Democrats held in Chicago in 1968, where protests against the Vietnam War ended up taking over the story. A year ago, wildfires tore through Lahaina in Maui, killing over 100 people and displacing 12,000. And today, everyone is still reeling from the impact. Tourism is way down, an estimated nearly $1 billion in lost revenue. And it's a huge problem because the tourism industry is the backbone of Maui's economy. It accounts for 70% of every dollar generated. Reporter Jen Murphy wrote for Bloomberg about the reasons tourism on Maui hasn't rebounded. One of the big ones, she says, is mixed messaging around reopening.
I think a lot of businesses on the island have been frustrated with the messaging that has been put out by the tourism board, who I will say is doing the best they can.
West Maui reopened in phases, which left some people confused about which parts of the island were okay to visit when. And a lot of potential visitors had ethical concerns. They felt guilty about vacationing where so many people had lost everything.
Reports were coming in that many people who were displaced were living in hotel rooms. That created a sense of questioning. If I have a vacation plan to Maui, am I taking a hotel room away from someone who really needs that space, who lost their home in the fire? As a result, a lot of people rebooked to other islands.
Arrivals to Maui the first half of this year were down about 25% compared to last year.
It's been really tough for businesses to lure people back. Some travelers have asked, why isn't Maui discounting? And, you know, we're not a cheap destination. And a lot of the hoteliers have echoed that sentiment. A disaster should not be a reason to discount a destination. So right now, Maui's hotels are some of the most, they are the most expensive room rates in Hawaii still.
Many of the other businesses that power the tourism economy, like food and transportation, are hurting too, which means so are the locals who make up the workforce. And they're struggling with the cost of living, especially housing. Maui has a chronic housing shortage, and the cost went up after the fire, pricing a lot of people out and off the island entirely.
One Uber driver I recently spoke to, born and raised on Hawaii, said, you know, he knows he missed the natural beauty here, but Las Vegas is where many of his friends and family have relocated, and it's almost guaranteed that they'll be able to get jobs there because it's, again, it's a tourism industry and it's much more affordable than Maui right now.
Murphy points out the irony here is, in many ways, this is the best time to visit Maui. Beaches are quiet, resorts are pristine, and businesses are more appreciative than ever to see tourists. Before we let you go, a few other stories being featured in the Apple News app. Voters in Missouri and Arizona will have the chance to put abortion rights into their state constitutions. Petitions to get the issue on the ballot in November were officially approved this week. These two states have some of the most restrictive policies in the country. Missouri has a near-total ban on the procedure. And the abortion rights measures could have broader impact on the election. Democrats are betting that similar ballot measures in various states will bring out progressive voters, which could help the Harris campaign and congressional Democrats. There are now 8 states with abortion-related measures on the ballot this fall, with others under consideration. Meanwhile, USA Today reports on a surprising change in American religion. There is a long-running trend of people leaving organized religion. Until recently, that's been driven largely by men leaving churches. Now, new data shows that younger women are rejecting organized religion in big numbers. Experts point to a number of reasons why. Some are frustrated by the gender hierarchies. Many take issue with reproductive and LGBTQ rights policies. If the trend continues, experts say, many communities of faith will start to look very different very quickly. And that's because women are typically very involved in their congregations, doing things like coordinating volunteer efforts and teaching classes. And finally, since the pandemic, we have seen a huge uptick in pet ownership, which means more people than ever are asking themselves tough questions like, are we forcing pets to live too long? Does my pet have ennui? Am I giving them a good life? These are just some of the essays in New York Magazine's latest issue, which is all about the modern-day ethics of having pets. And it's hitting a surprising chord with people. Some of the essays read more like confessions. I stopped loving my cat when I had a baby. Should I feel bad for using an e-collar? Or I think my dog misses my ex. And if all that wasn't click-worthy enough, the photography along with the articles is really something. I mean, it's humans done up in this creepy FX makeup and prosthetics to look like trapped pets. I mean, it's unhinged in a kind of fun way. I really can't describe it in a way that does it justice. You gotta just go look for yourself in the Apple News app. And if you are listening in the News app right now, we've got one of those New York Magazine articles queued up to play for you as a narrated article. If you are listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.